I'm Marty Moscoe, and welcome back to Radio Times. Early in my radio career, there was a station manager here at WHYY who took me under his wing. He seemed to believe that I could do radio when I had very little experience and very few skills. He let me know when I came up short and paved the way for opportunities to learn and grow. Looking back on that relationship now, I realize that he was a mentor to me, and I feel very lucky and very grateful because of it. Today on Radio Times, we want to explore this mentor-mentee or protege relationship in all its forms, what the qualities and characteristics are, what each person gets out of it, how to make the best of it, and what to look for. We have two guests who have joined us. W. Brad Johnson is a psychology professor at the United States Naval Academy. He's written several books on mentoring, including On Being a Mentor and the Elements of Mentoring. And W. Brad Johnson, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you for having me. Glad to be here.
Nice to have you with us. Also with us is Elise Nelson, President and CEO of the Vital Voices Global Partnership. That's a nonprofit founded by Hillary Clinton and Madeleine Albright, working with women leaders all over the world. And Elise Nelson, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Brad, let me begin with you. Did you have a mentor?
I think I've had a number of mentors. The one that I always think about most fondly is my graduate school mentor, Chuck Ridley, that I still reach out to. It's been 25 years, and I still reach out to Chuck. But much as you described your mentor identifying you, Marty, Chuck somehow identified me as a promising young grad student and initiated a relationship that has ended up being in many ways career long and really kind of altered the course of my career in many ways.
How about for you, Elise?
Absolutely. And I think my experience is very similar to both of your experiences where, you know, my mentor, I think, saw in me leadership, quite frankly, long before I saw it in myself. And that's the beautiful thing about mentors. And I think one of the greatest gifts that they can give to you. My mentor is a woman named Ambassador Milan Verveer, and I worked with her over about 13 years, you know, in an official capacity, but she remains my mentor and has really, you know, guided me and given me, you know, sometimes the tells me the things sometimes I don't want to hear,
right,
but the things I needed to hear. But really, you know, as I say, believed in me, and, you know, I wouldn't be in the job that I'm in today if it wasn't for her, you know, believing in me so early on in my career. And I'd say taking a risk on me so that I had the confidence, quite frankly, to take a risk on myself and my leadership.
Now, it's interesting because what I hear from both of you, Brad, I'll go back to you, which is that it was someone else who saw something in you. Because oftentimes a mentor relationship can go the other way. It's the other person looking for someone to mentor them. Help us understand what this dynamic is about.
Yeah, so you're absolutely right. It can go either way. And when you interview mentees, you know, and ask them about very salient mentorships, you'll hear both stories. Often, it will be a mentor who initiates a conversation or makes a comment about their promise or their good performance, and that leads to continued engagement. It's wonderful when that happens, and, you know, I applaud mentors who are that proactive. But just as often, you'll hear that a mentee really took the initiative, and I always am counseling folks early in their careers to be very deliberate about that. If you see somebody who you think you'd really like to learn from and that could be a mentor, you can't be reserved. You've got to take initiative. Bring yourself to their attention somehow, both through your performance, but perhaps also just looking for opportunities to be on committees or have exposure with them more often. And we just know that it's human nature. The more you interact with somebody, the more you tend to like them, and the more you might be likely to engage in a relationship. So you'll hear both stories. And I think if mentees or prospective mentees can take initiative, they're really going to increase their odds of finding a good relationship.
Elise, is there some kind of chemistry you think involved in the mentor-mentee relationship?
Absolutely. You know, it is a personal relationship at the end of the day. So, you might think someone has all the skills, you know, that you could really benefit from learning from, and an incredible network that have opened up to you, wow, could really, you know, change your trajectory. But if you don't have that sort of personal chemistry piece, it's not going to work. And at Vital Voices, we've been running mentoring programs for nearly 20 years, and we've just seen that it's a real strategy and it works, but it's not something that can be planned out completely because it is very much about that real personal relationship. I think sometimes with young people, there's this sort of misconception that, you know, a mentor is the person standing in front of you, reaching out their hand, and they're going to pull you up and sort of make your career. And it's all you need to do is really introduce yourself to them and ask, you know, will you be my mentor? And I think, you know, really a mentor is a person who sees you in action. I think as Brad said, you know, who observes you and who then I think, yes, you can make that ask certainly. Many of the mentors that I've had, it was never really an ask. It was just continuing to engage them, continuing to ask for their help. And that's the other thing about mentoring. You've got to be ready to be mentored, you know, and not everybody is.
Right.
You've got to be ready to get honest feedback. But I think, you know, a mentor is that person who stands behind you. Not the person pulling you up and making your career, the person who believes in what you're doing and is ready to stand behind you, you know, and be their sort of success or failure. And that's really important. And that will test a mentoring relationship.
And Brad, I'm assuming the mentor is also the person who can give you that tough love, right? Who can tell you when you have screwed up or when you haven't really done the job that you're capable of doing. These are sometimes hard things to hear.
It's easy to think the mentor is just there to be affirming and a cheerleader, and that is part of the role. And, you know, when you do surveys and ask mentees what was the most important thing your mentor did, affirmation and encouragement are always rated very high. And so you don't want to not do that if you're a mentor. But the challenge piece is crucial. And what I would say to mentors, you know, this is a harder part of mentoring. It's not easy to give corrective feedback. The question I would ask you is, if not you, who's going to do it? You're the one who's really committed to this person's career and their development. If you're not the one that gives them the transparent, corrective feedback to make sure that they don't make the same blunders, make sure that they are appropriate professionally, whatever that means, I'm afraid that you're sabotaging them in many ways. So, yeah, that is hard, and mentors sometimes struggle with that, especially if they tend to lean in the direction of just being benign and affirming.
But not everyone could be, or I would assume Brad should be a mentor. I mean, it's a big responsibility, and I'm assuming there's certain kinds of qualities or characteristics that seem to make for a good mentor. Yes.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true, and I always, you know, counsel organizations when they're thinking about mentor programs, don't make the mistake of assuming that anybody in a senior position can or should be a mentor. I do think people have got certain skill sets, and, you know, when I'm thinking about who would make a terrific mentor, I would love to see somebody who has some great emotional intelligence. So. Empathy, unconditional regard, some interpersonal warmth, good communication skills, and, you know, kind of a caring orientation so that if this person is committed to being a mentor, they're going to show up and actually follow through. Some of those things we can develop in terms of skills. We can make people better mentors. But if you have some fundamental emotional intelligence pieces missing, often that person is just not going to be quite as effective.
You agree with that, Elise?
Yeah, absolutely. I think emotional intelligence, the empathy piece, really important. The honesty and not having a fear of giving someone that honest feedback. You know, I think there's often a misconception that failure is the opposite of success. And certainly what I've learned, probably the greatest lesson I've learned from my mentors is, you know, that feedback is a gift and that failure is, you know, actually a stepping stone closer to success. And it's all about what you do with it, how you pick yourself up, you know, put pieces back together, learn from it. And I think mentors can be very helpful, you know, in that process. We have a really successful mentoring program. It's a partnership between Vital Voices and Bank of America. And it was really born out of a conversation that I had with one of their senior executives, Ann Finucane. And what she really believed strongly is that mentorship leads to leadership. And that was certainly what we were seeing as well. And so what we also talked about in our preliminary conversations as we were designing this program is that, you know, we're living in a world where in this country and really around the world, women have achieved success at some of the highest levels. A small percentage of women, but definitely they are out there. And they're looking to give back because all the statistics and studies will show that those people, men and women who are mentored, will go on to mentor others. And they make some of the best mentors, you know, the people who've experienced it and seen firsthand and know they can never pay their mentor back, so they've got to pay it forward. And so we really kind of seized upon the opportunity that so many women around the world had achieved at those highest levels and really wanted to give back. But they didn't just want to write a check, and they wanted to give back, you know, in their backyard, but beyond, around the world, and have a real global impact. And we designed this Global Ambassadors Program, which sends 10 sort of top women executives and leaders from around the world to a particular country or region. They're linked up each with a mentor. So it's a very small and intensive program. You know, you've got 10 mentors, 10 mentees. But in terms of impact, it's huge, because what we've learned is that you can train a person to be a leader, but until that person really gets a mentor to help guide them on that path, you know, they're not going to be able to fill their full potential and really become the leader that they can become.
Brad, let me go back to you about a minute or so before our first break here. What, though, does a mentor get out of this mentor-mentee relationship?
Yeah, it's a great question, and often we overlook that. We always talk about what the mentees are getting, and they get a lot. But mentees or mentors benefit in two broad categories. When you ask them, the first thing they talk about are the internal satisfaction and the delight in giving to the next generation, and just how meaningful that is. When you dig down a little bit, you find, though, that there are also some other kinds of tangible benefits. Mentors who are very prolific and do a lot of this end up being much better networked. They have more colleagues that they establish through their mentoring relationships. Many organizations recognize prolific mentors for being talent developers and star makers, as it were, and they reward them with bonuses and other kinds of things. I think it's a very smart thing to do. Mm. And then occasionally a mentee will reach back and help a mentor with something. It could be help on a project. It could even be offering the mentor a job. A mentee may have gone on and done great things. I'll tell you just quickly that I'm here at the Naval Academy because one of my former mentees came here and was on a job search committee and thought a job would be just right for me. And lo and behold, you know, here I am. So it's kind of funny how that will work occasionally.
Well, we're talking about the mentor-mentee relationship with Brad Johnson and Elise Nelson. And you can join the conversation at 1-888-477-9499. You can also email us with your stories. Keep them short. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. We're talking about the mentor-mentee relationship. And here's a scene from 30 Rock in which Liz Lemon tells her boss and mentor Jack Donaghy about her new mentor. And this is from an episode called Grand Mentor.
Speaking of our amazing dynamic, I have taken on a mentee of my own, Jack, a page named Hazel.
You're a mentor? But that makes me a grand mentor, and I'm still so young.
Don't worry, I already messed it up. I told her to break up with her awful boyfriend, and she got really mad at me.
Often the best way for a mentee to learn is for you to let her fail. Sometimes they have to learn the hard way. If Hazel rejects your advice, let her. She'll get there on her own.
Okay. I understand the irony of what I'm about to say, but I reject that advice. Don't worry, I'll bring you back a t-shirt from Success Town. Oh, my groin!
Such a silly show. A scene from 30 Rock talking about the mentor-mentee relationship. And again, our guests are Elise Nelson. She's president and CEO of the Vital Voices Global Partnership. That's a nonprofit founded by Hillary Clinton and Madeleine Albright, working with women leaders all over the world. Brad Johnson with us as well, psychology professor at the United States Naval Academy. He's written several books, including On Being a Mentor and the Elements of Mentoring. And you can join the conversation at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Elise, I just have to tell you a little funny story. When Madeleine Albright was on our show, gosh, when her memoir came out probably 10 years ago, she said, as we were sort of walking her out the door, there is, and I'm sort of misquoting her here, but nonetheless saying something to this effect, there's a special place in hell for women who don't help other women up the career ladder. Does that sound like the Madeleine Albright that you might know?
Oh, it does. She's got some of the best one-liners. And actually, I believe that one was picked up on a Starbucks cup. And rightfully so. It's a great saying. I agree. But I have to say, quite frankly, in my line of work, you know, we work with thousands of women in over 140 countries, women all over the United States. I actually find that women are desperate to pay forward the investments made in them and, you know, are looking for ways to give back. So, you know, although, you know, that is something you hear about, you know, women maybe not helping other women or pulling up the ladder behind them. I've certainly not found that to be true in the work that I do with Vital Voices.
That's good to know. Brett, let me go back to you. How does someone know if they're ready? And I guess I'm thinking in for the mentee or the protege, how do you know that you want or perhaps need a mentor?
Well, you know, it's an interesting question. I think very often people don't have much awareness, and especially young adults. I think we're talking more about mentoring, and that helps. But often there may not be a sense of just how important an early career helper and advocate can be. And so that's why I'm always encouraging organizations to encourage their senior folks to take initiative with this and to reach out to the new generation of employees. But what I would say is if you're new, if you feel lost, if you are feeling like an imposter, which many of us do when we take on those first career roles and even when we change jobs to different organizations, it is very grounding and very helpful to have some guidance. And often it can be a listening ear. It can be somebody who looks like they're approachable. If you think that you're missing some crucial skills, you know, reach out to somebody who demonstrates those. Those might all be signs that it could be useful for you to align yourself. And I would also just add on, it may not be one mentor in your new organization. We're talking more these days about constellations or networks of people who can be helpful to you. So maybe don't expect one individual to do it all for you when it comes to guidance and support. You might find you've got to create and craft your own kind of constellation of support. And what I would say is the more deliberate you can be about that, probably the more effective that support network is going to be.
You're at the U.S. Naval Academy. Do you think that's a place where, you know, young men and women can find a mentor just because of the hierarchy, the way the Naval Academy is structured?
Yeah, it's a great question. And it's funny. Years ago, we figured out that mentoring was happening a lot here. To our chagrin, it wasn't professors and it wasn't coaches or senior officers that were doing most of the mentoring. When you ask midshipmen who's helping you, we often found it was upperclassmen. That was such a pervasive finding that the academy actually codified that. And so now, every single freshman that's a plebe in our environment, every new plebe is assigned to a sophomore. So here's somebody who's actually survived the very difficult plebe year here. And that sophomore's marching orders are to get your plebe through their first year. It's sort of a gauntlet. It's a difficult, difficult life experience. And so as a sophomore here, a junior rising naval officer at the academy, you're learning early on how to take care of somebody and how to get them through and provide both personal support and career support, teach them what they need to know, watch out for them. Those are vital lessons. And as Elise said earlier, what we're doing when we do that, we're also teaching those plebes what it looks like when you're mentored, so that when it's their turn to step in and do that, they have some sense, they have some good role modeling. Now, ironically, I'll also tell you that when those sophomores get to be juniors, their job is to torment the plebes. So, you know, everybody's got a different role.
Right. We understand how that hierarchy does work there at the Naval Academy. Elise, an email from Neil says, I hate the word mentee. It grates on my ears. Why can't you use the word protege? I don't want to get stuck in a semantic debate here, but is protege, does that work?
You know, to me, protege is a little bit someone who's following in someone else's footsteps. And I'm not sure that's what mentorship is really about. You know, I've had many great mentors who are in totally different career fields than me, and not actually a career field that I would want to pursue. But I just find that they give really solid advice in a particular area. And are willing to spend the time and energy on me, you know, so right. I'm not sure protege is quite, I think protege is a very powerful word. I think it works in some sense, but I think, you know, the kind of mentoring that we do where we're really connecting women, around the world, who are often in very different, you know, fields or sectors, countries, cultures, I wouldn't say someone is their protege. To me, that has a ring of I'm following in their footsteps. I'm going to take on a very similar path. And that's not always the case.
Brad, sounds like you want to
add on to that,
please,
Marty.
Of course,
yeah,
go ahead.
Neil, it is a terrific question. I always have used the word protege in my own writing and research. It's a natural, and it sounds, maybe it doesn't grate on you as much as mentee. Here's the problem, and it was pointed out to me. Protege comes from the French to protect, and it has a flavor of paternalism and protection and, apprentice master. That's the history of the word. And it does rub people the wrong way. And especially, you know, in relationships we're trying to format that are very egalitarian and kind of co-equal and inviting, protege may be off-putting to some people. And that's thus the evolution of the word mentee. But just to give you a sense of why that is the case.
Well, and just picking up on what you just said, Brad, so from your perspective, that mentor-mentee relationship is a relationship among equals, even if one is, in a sense, quote-unquote, learning from the other?
Ideally, and I think you have to have real cultural sensitivity to this. So, you know, it depends on your environment. If I'm mentoring a brand new midshipman at the Naval Academy, I've got to respect the fact that they're going to see me as a master who has vast experience, and they're going to be very deferential. That relationship probably needs to be a little hierarchical at the beginning. I appreciate it. I respect that. But my job as a mentor is over time to make our relationship feel more and more egalitarian and collegial. I want to basically, in a mentorship, create a new colleague. That's my calling as a mentor. And so as is appropriate and as my mentee is comfortable with that, I'd like to invite them to have more of a collegial relationship.
Elise, I
agree with that.
Go ahead, Elise.
Absolutely.
Sounds like, yes.
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely found that, and Brad, you said this earlier as well, you know, over the course of a mentorship, because it's not like, you know, it's a 6-month, you know, hopefully it will go on for many, many years, as I think both of us have experienced, or all three of us have experienced with our mentors. I think that the dynamic often does shift. You know, it starts off a little bit more hierarchical, mentor-mentee, and I think it turns into a partnership. And I've certainly seen that with people that have been my mentors, because I'm always, you know, trying to support them in their endeavors, and now I'm actually in a position where I can support them. Mm-hmm. Whereas when I met them, I was, you know, a fresh, you know, intern just finding my way working on international women's issues with, you know, a heart full of passion, but, you know, I needed obviously some good guidance and support. But today I'm in, you know, 20 years later, I'm in a different place. And so I do have much more of a partnership. And, you know, even my mentor, who is still much more senior and much more experienced than me, Milan Verbeer. You know, she's been global ambassador for women's issues at the State Department. She was Hillary Clinton's chief of staff. She's now leads this big institute at Georgetown. But, you know, I think today she sees me more as her partner. And I think there is nothing that is more, I think, gives you more confidence as a leader as the day when it turns and all of a sudden your mentor reaches out to you and engages you as their partner and not just their mentee. And that's really powerful. And it's I think it's a really important part of the leadership journey.
And as for advice, for instance, something like that, we are talking about mentors, mentees. Sorry to our emailer who didn't like that word. Elise Nelson and Brad Johnson, our guests. Let me get some callers in. Terry from, looks like, Drexel Hill joining us on Radio Times. Hi, Terry. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Yes, I wanted to mention, I'm really enjoying this topic and this
Thanks.
Show. And I wanted to mention that my experience has been that when I was least expecting to find a mentor, I found one in the most unexpected places. And when I was a young prosecutor, I fully expected that an older, wiser, more experienced female prosecutor would take me under her wing. That never happened in all of the years that I prosecuted, but I was assigned to a judge who is no longer with us, unfortunately, who spent a couple of weeks slamming me in court, shall we say. We won some, we lost some, but one particular day was bad, and he called me to chambers and sat me down and said, let's go over these, and I'll tell you why I ruled as I did. And it was the beginning of a what I would call a mentorship relationship. His tip staff later told me that he'd never done that with anyone, but he did it with me because he seemed to have found something in me that reminded him of himself. And all these many years later, he's passed, but I still refer to a lot of the advice that he gave me. And I wish that he could have known the impact that that small relationship had on me and how I carry on my professionalism and my relationships with others. Yeah, that's what I wanted to share.
Well, Terry, I'm really glad you shared it. It's really a powerful and really quite wonderful story, raising a whole host of issues. Brad, you want to respond to what Terry just told us?
Sure. Yeah, excellent comment and reflection, Terry. Two things came to mind. Number one, just, you know, if mentors need any more powerful reminder about just how poignant the simple act of giving time to somebody who seems promising in some way can be, you just have got to revisit how significant that is. That judge did not have to take you aside and spend that extra time providing some career advice and some pointers, and it look what happened. It led to a really powerful developmental relationship. And then the other thing you mentioned is just the perpetuity in these relationships. We often can think of mentoring in very time-defined ways, but when you look carefully and you do the interviews with folks that have had powerful mentors, they'll tell you, just as Terry just did, that the relationship goes on. Sure, we don't see each other all the time. Maybe even decades go by, but I still feel sort of assured knowing my mentor is out there. And often these relationships continue, I would say, until the death often of the mentor. And, again, just sort of a word about how powerful these relationships are, not just for immediate career development, but for my lifelong kind of personal enhancement.
Terry, thanks for the call. Elise, she said something interesting, believing that this judge saw something in her that reminded him of himself. Is that also part of this mentor-mentee relationship?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, when I think back on some of the most powerful mentoring relationships and the things that they gave to me, it was really that tough feedback that was so hard to hear at the time, but really made me pause and think and shift gears. And so, you know, I love that story, Terry. It's a really great story. You know, one of the things that I would say to you, because I know that your mentor has since passed, you know, as I said before, you know, the way that you can honor their legacy is really to pay it forward and to mentor others. And I have no doubt you're probably doing that. But to be the mentor that maybe wasn't there for you, you know, to another woman. And I'm sorry that you didn't have that, the experience you would have hoped, but I'm glad you did find that mentor in the judge. You know, I think the other piece that's so important just to remember about mentorship is it is part of that journey of leadership. And I think sometimes we think that leadership's sort of that final destination at the end of the road, and we will no longer need mentors or help or support. We're at the top of the mountain. But, you know, leadership's a practice. It's a daily practice. And, you know, you need mentors, you know, throughout your life. And, you know, those tough conversations as I go on in my career, I find to be the most valuable. They're the touchstones or touch points that I come back to and have driven me forward. And it's where I've had the most learnings.
Brad, we have a question from Doris, email question saying, how do parental relationships influence mentoring relationships? Do you see some parallels there?
I do. I think there are parallels. And I do think that parents, you know, if they're creating positive, healthy relationships with kids, give their kids a sort of schema or a flavor for what helpful relationships are like. They also can create, you know, the conditions in which I can easily trust somebody who's an authority. I would say healthy relationships with parents can sort of prepare me to be a mentee who can trust a mentor and really take advantage of the relationship and just sort of assume, you know, that this mentor has my best interests at heart. I think if I've been burned in a parental relationship or that's been, for whatever reason, difficult for me, or maybe I've had a hard time trusting, I think naturally I can transfer that to a potential mentor and, you know, may cause me not to even reciprocate and take advantage of that relationship, or it may cause some dysfunction in a relationship once it does get going. So,
I would agree with you.
Give me healthy parents.
Sure. And you know what? I have to jump in here only because we do have to take a very short break. We'll get back to our conversation talking with Brad Johnson, psychology professor at the U.S. Naval Academy. He's written a book called On Being a Mentor and another one called The Elements of Mentoring. Also with us, Elise Nelson, president and CEO of the Vital Voices Global Partnership. And we are talking about mentors, mentees, taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. Much more after the short break. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss Cohen, and we're talking about the relationship between mentors and mentees. Here's a scene from Seinfeld in which Jerry is on a first date. I should add that the Gabe Kaplan he references at the very end of this clip is a comedian best known for his work on Welcome Back, Kotter. Let's listen.
Well, I started out working on mortgage bonds, but I just found that so limiting.
My friend Kramer and I were discussing that same thing the other day. He was with Brant Leland for a while.
Wow. Well, then my mentor suggested that I move into equities. It was the best move I ever made.
Mentor? You mean your boss?
Oh, no. Cynthia's just a successful businesswoman who's taken me under her wing.
Hmm. So Cynthia's your mentor?
And I'm her protege. You must have someone like that, you know, who guides you in your career path.
Well, I like Gabe Kaplan.
And again, talking with Brad Johnson and Elise Nelson about mentors. Brad, is anyone ever too old to have a mentor?
No, I think it's a great question. I think we overlook that as we move beyond the very junior phase of our careers. We may think that once we have made it beyond that first job assignment or, you know, kind of gotten comfortable in the organization, that we're good to go. And I think we miss out if we're not continuing to kind of think about folks who might help us develop and enhance our awareness of the organization, or to think about other career options and where I might go from here. I don't think there's enough focus on that. And I love the idea of creating a constellation of people who might be helpful. And these may be folks that you meet at different phases, you know, different parts of your journey along the way. And I encourage people to do that more because you just never know what you might not know about what the next steps might be.
Indeed. Let me get Rose from East Falls to join our conversation. Hi, Rose. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Go ahead.
My name's Rose. I founded a graphic design mentorship program here in Philadelphia through an organization called AIGA. And I founded this program because we founded it in 2009. It's been running ever since. But we founded it because in our field, graphic design and advertising, it used to be very much an apprenticeship relationship where you were hired as a young junior designer to kind of learn the ropes under the tutelage of a senior designer. And what we're finding more and more in our field is that juniors or young people are being hired for projects and then being let go, or there's really not the time or resources to really mentor someone within an organization. So I was just wondering if that's true of other fields, or if you had a comment on that type of workplace mentoring.
Rose, it's a great question. I'm going to put that to Elise Nelson. Elise, what do you say?
Yeah, I think that more and more there is actually a demand for mentoring. I think people recognizing that it is not just sort of a nice thing to do, but it's actually a real strategy. So I think, you know, and I commend you for the program that you've started. You know, it's hard to say whether there's less mentoring going on or whether there's more of a demand for mentoring. I certainly know among sort of the staff, younger staff, let's say, at Vital Voices, the Generation Y, there's a real interest in mentors. Yeah. And, you know, knowing that Vital Voices has a great, you know, stable of extraordinary women, there's always, you know, asks to me, can I introduce, you know, such and such to so-and-so so that, you know, they could potentially mentor this person. I'm asked by so many young women to mentor them. So I think it's hard to say whether there's a decrease or whether what I'm really seeing is there's an increase of demand, more people really wanting that and going out and seeking it in different ways, either in their own organization or through an external organization like the one, obviously, that you founded.
Yeah, Rose, thanks for the call. Here's an email from Victoria. I'll toss this first to you, Brad. She says, I'm a woman and some of my best mentors have been men. I believe it's critical that men mentor young women and women mentor young men. Do you agree with that?
100%.
Interesting. And I'll put that to you, Elise. Yeah, no, go ahead. Go ahead, Brad.
No, I'm so glad you said it. A colleague and I actually have a book coming out called Athena Rising, so look for it in a few months. And it's exactly on this topic. And what you find is that men are often very reluctant to mentor women for different reasons. There can be stereotypes. They can feel uncomfortable. There can be anxiety about perceptions in the organization. Well, what we find is that if younger women, especially in male-centric organizations, are not mentored by men, they just don't get mentored, especially if there are very few women around or the few positions for women that do exist are very competitive. Those women won't be mentored, and you'll be an organization that maintains this gender imbalance. So guys have got to get busy thoughtfully, carefully, skillfully mentoring women. So I absolutely agree. That's crucial.
And what do you think, Elise?
I agree as well. You know, and I think what we see around the world is that, you know, in many places in a career path, a woman may not see another woman in a position maybe that she's interested in having or, you know, a senior colleague who's a woman because maybe they're the first you know, to be on that path and maybe in that company, and they are the most senior woman, even though maybe they're further down the chain. And I think so there, you know, absolutely it's very important. Men hold the majority of the, you know, leadership positions, business and politics, you know, around the world. So of course it's very important that they mentor women. But I do think there's also something very special to be gained from relationships between women. I think that women provide a different perspective to other women. I think that there's a lot of issues that they find you know, synergy on, like work-life balance and pay equity and, you know, so many other issues that they just can, you know, collaborate on and talk about that I think wouldn't be there with a male relationship. But that's actually why having both is so important, right? To experience both sides of it. You know, and I think, you know, what I would certainly say to people is, you know, look out for both. And certainly the work we do focuses on connecting women with other women. But, you know, I absolutely agree with Brad that it is really important. And in fact, you know, one of the things that I've seen and just observed over the years working with women leaders is that if you talk to great women leaders about who've been some of their role models and mentors, what I find really interesting is all of them had at least one man in their life who believed in them, and that was really, really important for their leadership journey. So they may have had, you know, other women mentors, but they had that one man who believed in them, whether it be their father, their uncle, their brother, you know, a male colleague or boss. But I think, you know, that dynamic is really, really important.
Email from Victoria. Thanks for writing the email. Let me get John from, looks like, Pottstown to join our conversation. Hi, John. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Thank you. My question is what do you think about managers being a mentor for their direct report? Seeing as they have a relationship to write performance evaluations, would people be better served having a mentor without that direct reporting relationship?
That's a very interesting practical question. Brad, do you want to start on that?
Yeah, it's a crucial, excellent question, John, and this comes up all the time. And I, what I would say is that there's no absolute reason to say no. I think occasionally managers can handle that very well. However, I do think you've got to be very transparent about that and be very upfront about, you know, the multiple roles you might be playing with somebody. Occasionally, there can be some real tension between trying to advocate and support somebody and also evaluate them. Usually, this only goes south when you have to give, you know, a real negative evaluation, and then that can, of course, cloud the value of the mentorship. So, if possible, if I'm talking to an organization, I would encourage them to try and find non-direct report kinds of mentor pairings if they can look for those. But I certainly wouldn't prohibit them. And again, talking about constellations, a manager may be one of your mentors, maybe not the primary one, but maybe somebody who's very helpful and can be very collegial for you. But managers, if you're in that role, just recognize that these relationships can become very confusing and convoluted, and you've got to protect your mentees from these dual roles that can make them end up feeling, you know, like you've harmed them in some way. They thought they could count on you for just advocacy and cheerleading, and then there you go giving them a lousy evaluation.
Brad, just a quick follow-up there, and I'm wondering also in an organization, whether having this special relationship can create jealousy for people that don't have a relationship with that mentor who has seen something in someone else, obviously not themselves.
Absolutely, Marty. It's really true. And you, as a mentor, again, you've got to be so transparent. Don't hide the fact that you're mentoring somebody. Let it be right out there, and let everybody kind of have equal opportunity to get to know you. And there are going to be certain people who you really view as high flyers and very promising, you know, maybe next leaders of the organization that you might devote more time to. Be aware. Are they all men? Are they all women? Do they all look the same? Make sure that, again, people are getting equal access to you. And then this also brings up the issue of gender. You know, occasionally if somebody of the opposite gender is getting more access to you, that's when gossip develops and, odd perceptions about the relationship. You can't stop that, but you can be aware of it and be preventative by being very transparent.
Well, a lot of people want to join our conversation. Elise, let me read an email to you. This is an email from Lisa. She says, what are some methods for creating a mentoring culture within an organization? Do you recommend guidelines and potentially training for mentors, mentee, or both? Does training facilitate cultural adoptions? Any pitfalls, risks? Her overall question is, how in an organization do you create a mentoring environment?
Sure. Well, I'd say it goes back to the culture and values of the organization, right? So you can't just sort of say, we're going to have a mentoring program, and all of a sudden your culture is going to change to mentoring. So hopefully you're going to start with an organization that has as part of its core values that everyone knows about, you know, collaboration and support and some of these things that tie into mentoring. And I think if you can kind of start there and say, you know, we need to build a mentoring program to really be true to who we are as an organization and really live our values and spread that culture, particularly among some of the younger staff. And obviously, you know, within my organization, that's very, very important because, you know, our core values and the work that we're doing in the world is all about mentoring and collaboration and support and listening and hearing those voices and feedback and excellence through, you know, really trial and error and not being afraid to take risks and fail and then get back up again. So I think that's the first piece. You absolutely need guidelines. Absolutely. That's very critical. One thing I'd say, you want to be a little cautious about. Let's say you have a mentoring program where your mentor is not your boss, and it's someone else's boss. You just have to be careful there. So you got to have got to set some parameters, right? Because you wouldn't want it to be like, well, my mentor says this, but you're saying this. And let's say the mentor is more senior than the boss. That could definitely create, you know, some difficult dynamics. You also might think though about creating a mentoring program drawing upon great external resources. You know, one of the great things there is that the person might feel a little bit more open to share some of their thoughts and dreams or struggles. You know, and hopefully you'd create some parameters there as well that, you know, it's not an opportunity to just, you know, kind of complain about, you know, things that are going on in the work environment, but really something that's very constructive. So you need parameters on both sides. You need to carefully select both your mentors and your mentees. The program that we run that I was talking about earlier, our Global Ambassadors Program with Bank of America, we have a application process for mentees, and we didn't start off that way.
Oh, that's interesting.
You know, and quite frankly, we got some mentees who were not ready to be mentored. They weren't ready to kind of have their ideas ripped down and built back up stronger. They just weren't ready to accept that. So it was a waste of time then for the mentors. And over the years, we really perfected that program where we've got an application. We really know what they need. They're ready to take it. But on the other side, we do careful screening of the mentors. They're not just people with skills, but people who also have the time to give back, you know, aren't going to, you know, just connect with this person and leave them hanging. Are really going to take the time to follow through. We look for people who've had positive mentoring experiences themselves.
You know what, Elise, I got to jump.
There's a careful science.
I got to jump in here only because we're almost out of time, and I unfortunately we can't get Bill to join us. He's a trucker on north on 295. Brad, I'll put this to you. He says, was mentored, became a partner with the same person, and they became best friends, and it went on for 35 to 40 years. Now he's been doing mentoring, and people are calling him a life coach. But what I see also on my two screens here is this mentor that becomes the friend or the friend who becomes the mentor. It is interesting to think of those two kinds of relationships together.
Yeah, but I think that's a nice natural evolution of a good mentorship, and it won't always happen, and so you don't want to assume that all your mentoring relationships are going to evolve into a close personal friendship, but it certainly has been my experience, and I see it in the literature all the time, that some of these really enduring, high-impact relationships do evolve into these collegial connections that, you know, they're almost like a sort of a love relationship, like you'd find between very close friends or siblings, and they can persist, you know, for the rest of the person's life. And even if we don't see each other for years, we have that kind of bond and connection, and I can always count on the fact that you're in my corner. So, again, you don't see it all the time, but it's a nice outcome and really an enjoyable part of a good mentorship when it happens.
Well, Brad Johnson, thank you so much for joining us today in Radio Times.
You bet. I'm glad to be here.
And nice to have you with us. Psychology professor at the U.S. Naval Academy. Elise Nelson, thank you for joining us as well.
thrilled to be with you.
You're welcome. President and CEO of the Vital Voices Global Partnership. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes. Clearly, a lot more discussion going on that we couldn't get on the air. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder, Emily Bryant, John Ahrens, and Liz Fiedler. I'm Marty Moscoane. Thank you so much for joining us.